Hello and welcome back to the Dive and Dig News Podcast. This week we're travelling back in time to the medieval period to visit the Mary Rose, Henry VIII's flagship, now housed in its museum in the historic dockyards in Portsmouth, UK. The Mary Rose was raised after years of excavation in 1982, and today I'm talking with Chris Dobbs, recently retired museum curator, about his life with the ship from excavation to display. Chris, thank you so much. I'm just delighted. It's been ages since we've touched base, and it's really lovely to see you. So, and I'm really, really pleased that you've agreed to do this interview. As you know, it's for the news piece, and the breaking news is that Chris Dobbs, head of archaeological research, what was your former title at the Mary Rose, has retired after 45 years. So what was your title?
Well, over the last however many years you've just said, my title has changed from doing almost everything at the Mary Rose, from being an archaeological supervisor and then being one of the team that dived on the salvage diving team to raise the ship, but then reinstating all the timbers in the ship in the mid-80s, running the museum at one stage and the shop and education. But for the last 15 years, I've been working on the new museum. And my actual title when I retired, which is the big news, was head of interpretation and maritime archaeology. But now my title is curator emeritus. So I've tried to retire, but they've brought me back in an honorary role.
Yeah, well, I mean, who can blame them? Because, I mean, I was lucky enough to bring students over to the museum, and you know, you brought so much life and enthusiasm to that space. So I can understand why they don't want to lose you. But you must have seen so many changes as well through that time. Obviously, starting as an archaeologist, but more specifically within the museum. I mean, the current exhibition is amazing. There's no doubt about it. But I mean, then a lot went into that, and I'm just wondering, you know, how you saw those changes emerge and what were those sort of critical points in the amazing museum you have today?
I think change is inevitable, and I think it's really, really important that museums do keep changing. So what we've tried to do is to produce a museum that is popular with non-museum goers. You know, we can't have maritime archaeology just appealing, or even museums, just appealing to, you know, white Anglo-Saxon middle-aged men who are interested in the Navy. You know, we've tried to make it popular for everybody. And I'd like to challenge anybody in the world to find something of real interest in the museum to them, you know, that they can associate with, whether it's knit combs or drinking vessels or the ends of shoelaces. Throughout, you know, over the last 30 years, we've had different epochs and reinvented ourselves with how we display the ship, how we display the objects and so on. And so the latest phase was to really change it from a museum. I say it's not a museum about a ship. It's not even a museum about objects. It's a museum about people. So we tell people stories in any way we can. And what I want is that when people go there, they empathise with a Tudor sailor. They think about those people who lived and worked and died on board that ship. And so we have to keep reinventing ourselves. And in fact, the latest reinvention, we only opened this spring, this Easter. And one of the reasons why I stayed on was to make sure that I stayed on to open this new 4D theatre.
4D theatre? Wow. Okay, I'm totally out of touch. I haven't even heard about this.
We have to appeal to young people and people who don't go to museums. So although, you know, my whole philosophy over the years is that we must keep authenticity and integrity, we have to use the methods used by, you know, Disney World and the Epcot Center and Hollywood to engage our audiences. So a 4D theatre is where you put glasses on and you see it in 3D, but there are various 4D effects which you'll have to go and see to, or I shouldn't say see, you have to go and experience to realise, but it's to make you thoroughly immersed.
When you say thoroughly immersed, where are you being thoroughly immersed? Are you in the hull, or are you on a deck, or are you under the water? Where are you?
Well, I don't think I should give too much away. When we created the museum, we didn't tell so much of the story of the excavation and the salvage. I suppose partly because it was my experience. You know, it was important. It wasn't just a museum about the modern age. It was a Tudor museum, and everything was about Tudor and the objects, that the stories we could tell through the objects. So I think we slightly downplayed the excavation and salvage, and people have noted that over the last 15 years. So this is telling the story of the discovery and excavation and salvage, but the audience actually dive down in 3D and can see the ship being revealed and then seeing it salvaged. So it's particularly to help non-divers have an idea about what it's like diving on the Mary Rose.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's such a good idea, because I completely agree with you. It was the sort of underplayed bit, and it's quite a difficult thing to do potentially without those technologies, actually, because it is the experience, as you say. That's really brilliant. I had no idea. And, you know, I mean, obviously, it's, as you say, it's about the ship, it's about the objects, it's about, most importantly, the people in the medieval era. But I think it's really important to try and, I don't know, help people understand what it's like to be a maritime archaeologist, and what it's like to be under the water, and to, you know, to reveal those objects and that excitement.
Yeah, one thing that I was particularly pleased about is that Binky McKee, Alex McKee's daughter, is quite involved with the May Rose now. Comes and sees this quite often. And she saw this film and she thought, that is fantastic. Now, at last, after 50 years, I understand what my father meant when he said that he went down and saw all this mud and had to get rid of it and this sort of thing. And I thought that was the most wonderful idea, that someone who doesn't dive, has never dived, was suddenly realised what her father was doing, you know, in the 60s and 70s on the Mary Rose site. And that was particularly gratifying. But so it's like an all round experience.
Yeah, it sounds like every maritime archaeologist needs to drag their family along to experience it for that very reason. That's amazing. And how much do you think? Because, I mean, I know that you've not only, I mean, you've described your career and life very much with the Mary Rose, but you also have spent quite a bit of time communicating your ideas across the globe, and also sort of drawing experience from other museum exhibitions from across the globe. How much do you think that has influenced the way that you've formed your thinking around the exhibition display?
I think enormously. I mean, I lived abroad as a child, so I've really been visiting museums for the last 60 years. And there's bits of hundreds of museums encased in that display that I visited. And they always say that plagiarism, I think, is when you copy from one source. But if you copy from lots of sources, it's scholarship. But I've had an amazing time, particularly through UNESCO, giving, I wouldn't call it advice, but trying to provide people in other countries with a toolkit that then they can pick and choose bits that might help them with their work. So I've been so fortunate in my career to have been able to visit China and Peru and Chile and Egypt and Cambodia and Taiwan and India and all sorts of places where, you know, we started doing our work 20 or 30 years earlier. And what I'm really keen for is that archaeologists in other countries don't have to reinvent the wheel. You know, they should start where we are and take it further forward rather than starting again at the very beginning. And the work that we've done through the NAS training scheme has been really important for getting maritime archaeology and the underwater cultural heritage known throughout the world and recognised, and better awareness of it publicly, because it's through public awareness that we'll be able to protect these shipwrecks and archaeological sites.
Absolutely, absolutely. So this toolkit is available through UNESCO, did you say? Or is it something? It sounds like something I should be using with my work with the Honor Frost Foundation.
No, this toolkit's just in my head.
Chris, that needs to be a retirement project. Retirement project number one. Putting the toolkit into some sort of reality. That would be so amazing, though, to do that.
To me, I mean, I've not written lots of books. Other people have done that. My book, as it were, is the museum exhibition. So, you know, in 15, 20 years' time, it'll be overtaken by new ideas. But that's, I suppose that's my legacy at the Mayrose rather than publications. The other thing is I can't really write down the toolkit, because to me, a lot of it is trying to inspire other people and encourage them and give them ideas. And it's a two-way process. I don't think you can inspire people just through words, or at least I can't. I find you need to have a bit of emphasis on things. You need to be able to do it in discussion. You need to be able to answer questions, which I don't think you can do very well in the written format.
No, I think you're probably right. My mind is whizzing around now. I've got you earmarked for consultancy for this, that and the other project for the foundation, because I think I completely agree with you. I mean, it's that mechanism of communication, bringing things alive, but making things visible, really, because that's the only way that we're going to get more momentum behind the subject. And it's really important, and it's so important for the, you know, the Honor Frost region in the Eastern Mediterranean, where maritime archaeology is fairly low on the visibility scale. So no, it's,
I think it's strange that, because in a way that's where nautical archaeology, underwater archaeology started. I mean, I remember when I, in fact, how I first got involved with all this is that I was reading archaeology and I went to a series of six lectures by Joan Duplat Taylor and Keith McElroy. And, you know, they were just talking about, you know, Antikythera and Mardia, and I don't think Search Helaman had started, but the excavations at Bodrum. And it's those things that, as I was doing classical archaeology at the time, those are the things that really inspired me. So it's a pity if the Eastern Mediterranean is not leading on all these aspects.
No, I agree. I think, without blowing my own trumpet, I think the Honor Frost Foundation is making a difference. But I think that, you know, there's a context to all of this. The archaeology in the region is amazing, but the context for communicating that, I mean, you know, there's limited education and lots of other things, but it's changing. It's changing. Anyway, I shouldn't be talking about the Eastern Mediterranean. This is about the Mary Rose.
So, I don't know. Why not? In fact, one of my, it was the last words of my my thesis at Cambridge was the words from Salomon Reinach from just over 100 years ago. And he actually said, I'll probably get it wrong, but Le musée d'antiquité la plus riche du monde, c'est encore inaccessible. C'est le fond de la Méditerranée occidentale, i.e., you know, the richest museum in the whole world is still inaccessible. It's the seabed of the Eastern Mediterranean. And actually, the trouble is now it is accessible. I think bringing history to life, bringing archaeology to life, by reaching the maximum number of people, I think, is important. You know, we were always taught, you know, I was taught 50 years ago, it was all about publication, publication, publication. But to me, that's not the end process of archaeology. The end process is telling the actual public. They don't read these journals, these wonderful journals that you and I and others produce, or these thick books of the maritime archaeology of the Mary Rose. They want to see things and feel things and, you know, have a 4D experience.
Yeah, no, you're so right. Well, hopefully we're going to be doing more along with. So, the toolkit, these people, I'm sure you've been asked this before, but if you had to choose something that you think really made that huge difference, would you be able to narrow it down to an element of the display or a particular approach? What gave you the most excitement in terms of people's reactions, I guess?
Yes, I think so. I think controlling your audience, your visitors, controlling what you reveal at certain times. But I think one of the hardest things to do, which I am pleased with, is how we've combined different ways of receiving the information at the museum, whether through audio or through video or through looking at the objects, and through touching things and feeling things and smelling things. To try and get different elements like that in each of the galleries, I think was quite difficult without it looking like a mishmash. So my idea is that anyone who goes there can receive their information in different ways. And we didn't have the luxury of being able to have different wings of the museum for people who take in their information in different ways. You know, we couldn't have a family wing and a old age people wing and a young people's wing and a foreign people's wing. It all has to be in each gallery because it's a sequential museum. And I think trying to get that combination so that anybody can understand and appreciate the collection, I think that was one of the hardest things and one of the things that I'm most pleased with.
And you really, really achieved that. It is what makes the museum so special. Thank you, Chris. I'm going to, unfortunately, bring this discussion to an end. But I really, really appreciate you finding the time to talk to me. And maybe when you're next down in Portsmouth, we could rendezvous and go to the 4D experiential.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Lucy. And I just hope that people listening to this will visit the museum and really enjoy what we have shown and what we've shown over the last 45 years about bringing maritime archaeology and all our wonderful history around the coast of Britain to a larger public.
Fantastic. Thanks, Chris. Fantastic. Chris has such a way with words. Probably why the museum is so successful in communicating. And I'm really keen to go back to the museum and experience the 4D immersive. That sounds such fun. I would encourage everybody to go. It's an amazing museum. So thanks very much for listening to the Dive and Dig News podcast, brought to you by the Honor Frost Foundation, a charity that supports maritime archaeological research in the Eastern Mediterranean. I look forward to speaking to you again soon. Cheers. Bye.